Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, and we are the next fans up. Welcome to the AFC South podcast preview of the entire division. I'm the next fan up because I'm filling in for Pod Vader as the host. I'm Ryan Mercier, your Jacksonville Jaguars super fan. Also, Pod Vader just had a birthday recently, so the entire next fan up crew wishes you a slightly late happy birthday. With us today, the other next fans up, we have our man in Indiana, Dan Kester, our Colt superfan. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing really good. Looking forward to talking about the AFC South today.
That's right. And making his next fan up debut, Neil Donahoe of the of North of England. We have another one just like English Simon in the group, and I believe our Bucks superfan as well. Let's welcome Neil in, our Tennessee Titans superfan.
All right, guys. Excited to talk the second worst division in football.
I was so prepared to talk about just the AFC South. Who's the worst? I can't even rack my brain right now.
I think we're slightly better than the NFC South.
Oh, shots fired already. I'm gonna have a lot of fun today, guys, especially with the first two topics that I had in mind. I've already let you guys know what they are, but I'm gonna let all our listeners know right now. As soon as I think about that NFC South thing for a second here, they obviously had a very down year last year, but typically there's a team from there that's pretty good, and it's usually good competition, but I guess they have been going kind of off of reputation rather than what actually happened on the field. So before I move on, Neil, that's interesting again. So even with Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, and now famous Jameis, you still think they might be the worst division this year?
I mean, yeah, when you put it like that, it obviously, on face of it, seems like a good division. But when a team with a losing record wins it, you're only as good as your last season.
Yeah, that's right. At least in our division, we got a team with a winning record. Feels weird talking pride, but yeah, go ahead, Dan. You're our winner.
Well, we not only had a team that was, you know, with a winning record, we had a team make it to the AFC Championship game. And you know, we hang banners for pride in our division, so we'll go ahead and hang that banner for our AFC Championship runner-up and let it hang proudly, I guess.
Well, isn't that just nice? I was talking with the guys beforehand saying it's almost a little odd being clumped together in these divisions because these are teams that I don't like very much. They're in my division, but these are nice guys doing the previews and trying to be objective a little bit for everyone listening out there. And, you know, we just have to hear Dan brag about his banners and making it to the AFC Championship. How about that, Neil?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've got a lot of Colts fans in England too. Courtesy of Peyton Manning, I suppose. So I ain't got a lot of love for them guys.
It's good to know there's good people in England.
Yeah, they were. They were called the Beatles, and then a lot of them became Colts fans, and then we won't speak of them. Actually, Neil was letting me know that the London thing is working as well. I'm going a little off track than what I thought, but the London thing is working for Jacksonville. Is that right? There's a lot of Jags fans and Jags media love.
Yeah, there's a lot of adopted Jaguars fans. For some strange reason, the 0-17 Detroit Lions, 0-16 Detroit Lions, a lot of fans gravitated towards them. And then when Jacksonville started coming over, they actually have built a little fan base too. So we love bad teams, I suppose.
Wow. Well, good. There you go. England just gets on the lovable loser train. Go ahead, Neil.
The media is very, very kind to Jaguars in this country. Very kind. I think, I suppose, partly because they're trying to sell tickets, but I do understand that they're trying to develop the game as well. So they put a positive spin on everything.
Well, did they put out a news story that the Jaguars won the Super Bowl last year or something? That would be great.
Kind of like a North Korea type. It's not that bad.
Exactly what I was thinking. Jags win the Super Bowl again. Oh, I need to move to England, apparently. All right. Speaking of raising banners and teams performing well on the field and all that sort of stuff, and last year's AFC Championship game, before we get to our teams, I want to talk about Tom Brady real quick for Dan and I, because Tom Brady, as we all know, we don't have to get into Deflategate or Balghazi, as it's been called on the podcast, but he is suspended for 4 games. Of course, he also has an appeal that will be coming up, and maybe it gets taken down to 2. And everyone's like, why are you talking about Tom Brady? He's in the AFC East. Well, it's very important to either Dan or myself, because first of all, if his appeal is taken down to 2 games, week 3, he plays, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and New England is at home that game. But if he's suspended for all 4 and it doesn't get taken down, in week 6, because the Patriots have a bye week, New England travels to Indianapolis. And the reason I bring this up is I believe one of our teams is going to feel the wrath of Tom Brady, and he is just going to light up either of our defenses. It almost doesn't matter who he's playing. I am just fearful of that game, and I hope just for that reason that Tom Brady's suspension stays the same. And I'd just like your thoughts on that, Dan.
Well, since we're doing the AFC South podcast, I'm going to put a positive spin on it and look back to last year when it took him a couple of games to get warmed up, 3, maybe 4 games before he finally started getting back to form. So that's what I'm going to hope for, is the 4-game suspension. And hopefully Bill Belichick keeps his game-by-game approach in the first few weeks of the season. And, you know, it's not realistic to say, but hopefully Jimmy Garoppolo gets all the first-team reps and Tom Brady's left on the sidelines getting ready to get in for these games. He doesn't have the timing for his receivers, but, you know, that's pushing it. But that's my hope for it. But I'd love to have him come back into Indianapolis, and just for the historical aspect of the Tom Brady versus the Colts piece, and have him come into Indy, have the fans all barking down his back, and hopefully he'll struggle and go down quickly and easily. But, you know, it's probably not realistic with one of the more competitive quarterbacks, even in today's NFL.
Yeah, that I really think you made an interesting point there. And just real quick, I'm sure that would be a much easier game to bill for the NFL. And I see that's actually, I forgot, it's a Sunday night game at Indianapolis. So if that's Tom Brady's first game back, my goodness, that's just going to be something that all the TV execs and everyone is just going to point to look forward to. But I do like that you said it took Tom Brady and the Patriots about 4 weeks to really get going last year. The one thing I was going to say, and it's a topic we talked about last AFC South podcast a lot, is without Tom Brady and with Jimmy Garoppolo in, one thing that I should think that they'll work on a lot is running the football. And that means they would have 4 weeks of just trying to run the football, play defense, and make it easy on Jimmy Garoppolo. And we know what Indy's weakness has been against New England.
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room, but we'll see. Hopefully they figure it out. I'd like to see some regression towards the mean for the Colts on the defensive side, especially against New England. So I guess it really doesn't matter too much. Bill Belichick is good at what he does. And until the Colts figure out a way to stop the run, like you made a great point, it doesn't even matter who's playing quarterback.
Yeah, they use the running game a lot there. All right, and again, One other topic I want to bring up, and then we'll go position by position in the AFC South. And apologies to all Houston Texan fans which are listening right now. Again, we don't have a Houston Texans rep, so please send in your applications to nextfanup@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter and just say, hey, I like the Texans, because at this point that might be good enough. We need you out there. Just so you know, you haven't heard your Texan's voice because he's not here. And before we do our position breakdown of the AFC South, one other quick topic I want to bring up is on the AFC West preview that we had here. I'm calling out some fans, and they've really done a great job. I caught up on some of our last previews the last few weeks. But there's just one little thing that I wanted to take umbrage with. And that is a word somebody used to describe Peyton Manning, and everyone just kind of let it go and all agreed. And Neil, I want to hear your thoughts first, and then I'll let Dan rebut, because he is the Colts fan and saw Peyton Manning for years. But one word they used to describe him on the AFC West podcast was tough. And when I think of tough, I think of Ben Roethlisberger. I think of, I don't know, is Cam Newton tough? You know, just those guys that can take the hits, keep on going, and you can be tough and not very good at the same time too, or you can be very good and not be tough. But for a guy who sacks himself, tough is not a word I would describe Peyton Manning. Neil, do you have any thoughts on that?
I kind of see where you're coming from. I think tough in a sense that it's tough when everything's going his way, when everything's working, when he's not pressured, when he's changing everything at line of scrimmage and dictating a game. And I think obviously anybody who plays in the league for 18, going on 19 years or whatever it is now, is obviously has some kind of toughness. But I think a lot of it is self-preservation. You could say that's smart, rather than just actually taking it and trying to set a tone that is tough, if you understand what I mean.
I would exactly say it's smart, and I would call him intelligent, and I would call him incredible. And I'm not saying sacking yourself has been a bad choice, because it did preserve him, but, you know, there was just a word that stuck out to me, and I personally believe, probably being a jaded Jaguars fan, that that's not a word I would describe him, but smart is one. Dan, what do you think?
I think that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, those quarterbacks, they stand in the pocket. They'll take those hits. But the thing that we don't know is, you know, Peyton Manning went down with an injury, had to have his neck head surgery on it and all these other probably upkeeping surgeries that we don't hear about. So I think the key with him being tough is just he doesn't talk about his injuries. He doesn't whine about his injuries, and he plays through whatever he has to play through. And then the other advantage of being Peyton Manning is you have to play, you know, 18, 19 game seasons every 3 or 4 years. So he's playing longer seasons where he's going to have to go through more injuries, and you never really saw him in the injury report. So I think that's the tough aspect to Peyton Manning. And yeah, he's smart. He doesn't take all the big hits. But, you know, now that I'm approaching the other side of 30, I wake up in the morning with injuries, and I tell my wife about them every single day. Ah, my hamstring. Ah, my back. You know, and I'm a young 30 still.
Dan is feeling the hits. It's rough. Yeah. Uh-huh. Getting rough. Well, it's just a word that stuck out to me, and these are obviously semantics, and anyone who's been through that many neck surgeries, of course, has a level of toughness, but I wanted to bring it up because I didn't agree with it, and I would love anyone to tell me that I'm wrong to hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast or everyone to tell me I'm right. That's actually something I would prefer. But
as a Jaguars fan, you can take into account that your old Byron Leftwich let it come back in college with a broken leg. Now that's tough.
That I was very excited to get Byron Leftwich because of that game. I wish it worked out better. He's a good guy just with a slow release. But, yeah, getting carried down the field by your team, literally carried by your teammates just to snap the ball is something truly amazing. And, you know, another example of toughness outside of the division, but like Matthew Stafford, he had his arm like dangling off his body or something, and he went back in and threw a touchdown. I forget against what team, but, you know, that showed me something for him. One other guy who is tough and a reason I wanted to lead in that way and who I find much harder to hate because of it, in all honesty, and you brought him up, is Andrew Luck. Now, that's a guy that I look at, and I'm not saying that this is the most important trait for a quarterback or anything, but we are now going to segue into our positional breakdown and start with the quarterbacks in the AFC South, and you have to start at the top. But one word I would describe Andrew Luck with is certainly tough, and just by looking at him with the caveman and neck beard thing going on, he looks like he's going to eat me or something. He's got a lot of the tools and intelligence, but he's also tough. So, Dan, just sing your Andrew Luck praises.
Well, you know, the best part, in my opinion, of Andrew Luck is he's a leader, but he'll go out on the out on the field and he'll kill his opponent with compliments. He gets knocked down after a good hit. He helps the defensive lineman up or the linebacker up and says, "Hey, man, good hit. Keep bringing the heat." So he plays the leader for his team, and then he kills the other team with compliments throughout the game to add insult to injury, so to speak, by finding his receivers down the field or extending plays inside the pocket. One of the plays that this offseason that you keep hearing referenced is in the playoff. He had taken, I think it was a five or seven step drop, step back up into the pocket, getting chased, and as he's getting tackled, literally getting tackled, he throws a perfect pass in stride to Dante Moncrief for a touchdown. So the play's never over when you're Andrew Luck, and it's one of the more incredible types of quarterbacks that we have in today's NFL. He's not Aaron Rodgers-esque in terms of running ability, but I think he's Aaron Rodgers-esque in terms of scrambling ability, and he does, in my opinion, a little better job of keeping his head up and looking for that play. But sometimes when he looks for that play too, he'll throw the interception or put a strip sack from behind, turn the ball over. So once he figures out how to eliminate those turnovers, I think his name will be up there with the best of the league pretty consistently for the next couple of years. And then it might be a two-dog race at that point between him and Aaron Rodgers with these other quarterbacks getting ready to leave the league.
And what a luxury that is to have. And it is true. I mean, he's basically mentioned with Aaron Rodgers already. Obviously, Rodgers is the best QB in the league, and he can just do everything. But when the question comes up, if you could draft a QB today, you know, if there was just a draft where all the players in existence are just in a pool and you have the first pick, who do you take? Some people take Rodgers because he's the best and he's still relatively young, or at least right now he's not old. But some people make the argument that you take Andrew Luck right now because he's still young.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where my head would go. And, you know, the sky's the limit for a guy like Andrew. As humble as he is and as much as his teammates look up to him, he's a great quarterback to have. And, you know, right now he's the biggest luxury, and with acquiring free agent talent, you get guys coming in because you have a quarterback, because that quarterback has the opportunity each and every year to take your team to the Super Bowl. Going back to the lack of run defense, you know, granted they play in the AFC, they were still in the AFC championship game this year because of the quarterback position.
Yep. That's exactly right. Now, Dan, before we get to Neil again or myself, I'm just going to ask you a question. And real quick, I will tell you just for you, the basis of your answer, the Houston Texans quarterback depth chart, and this competition is still going on as far as I understand, says Brian Hoyer first, Ryan Mallett next, and Tom Savage. But not just about the Texans, but my question to you is, in the AFC South, who is the second best quarterback?
Well, one of the reasons I love the AFC South is teams consistently struggle to find a quarterback, so it always cements the Colts at the top of the division. If I had to pick a quarterback to start my season with for a one season showing, I would have to say it's Brian Hoyer, based solely on the fact that I know that he won't lose me a game. Well, if I ask him to not lose me a game, he won't lose me a game. With Bortles, with Marcus, you don't know what they're gonna do yet. Do they have more room to grow? Definitely. But if I have to pick a quarterback for my AFC South team this season to make me the most competitive, I would have to go with Brian Hoyer.
Very, very interesting and hurtful. Neil, Dan just picked Brian Hoyer over anybody you have on your depth chart. First of all, I've got a few questions for you. On draft day, and be honest, you're on a lie detector. Were you hoping that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers took Marcus Mariota so you could end up with Jameis Winston?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I've loved Jameis Winston from the first pass he threw for Florida State. I think the character concerns are a little overblown. He's just an immature kid, and I think when he gets in an NFL environment, I think he'll shake those issues, and I just think he's going to be a really, really solid starter. I think there's less grey areas than there is with Marcus as far as on-field performance.
Right. Well, I do agree with you. I did like Jameis better just in general over Mariota. And one other person I want to bring up is someone I took in last year's Superfan mock draft in the third round was Zach Mettenberger. I took him to be the Jaguars' franchise quarterback, essentially. And you saw Matt Mettenberger last year. He only had a year, though, so I don't really know what he brings to the table. Tell me what you think about Zach Mettenberger. Can he be a starter in the league? You know, he's obviously going to be supplanted here by Mariota. But tell me just your thoughts as a quarterback on Zach Mettenberger.
First of all, I don't think there's a quarterback on the Texans that's better than Zach Mettenberger. I think he's got an absolute cannon for an arm, which I think lends itself to the wide receivers that we've now got with DGB and Justin Hunter. Obviously, he's kind of cement footed in pocket and is not running anywhere anytime soon, so you lose that dimension. I just think if he could work on his accuracy, which I think accuracy is one of those things where you've either got it or you haven't. It's one of them things that really, I'm not sure it can be developed like other traits, but I think if he could work on his accuracy, it could be a really solid starter.
Well, I tend to agree with you, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. I mean, obviously there's injuries, and we definitely hope Mariota doesn't get injured. I hope nobody gets injured. I'm getting so tired of injuries, especially while watching the NBA playoffs here on a slight tangent. But it appears, you know, well, they took him number two, so it's not just appearances. Marcus Mariota is the Tennessee Titans franchise quarterback, or at least he will certainly try to be. So I need to hear your thoughts on Mariota, and before you get talking on him, I had an epiphany yesterday, and then I realized that it wasn't an epiphany, and it's just a general thought that a lot of people have had by one simple Google search, so I didn't feel as smart as I thought. But Marcus Mariota, I was trying to think, you know, what quarterback does he remind me of? And he reminds me of RG3, and we know that hasn't exactly worked out, although maybe you could blame Shanahan for the injury in the playoffs and playing him too soon. But basically, that's kind of how I see him, and I wasn't really sure about him as a quarterback. But tell me, what do you think about Marcus Mariota on the Tennessee Titans?
Well, first of all, I think that the concerns over Ken Whisenhunt on not being able to develop quarterbacks, they're a little overblown. I mean, he didn't develop Ryan Lindley, and he didn't develop John Skelton, but look what he did with
Philip Rivers, Kurt Warner, and Ben Roethlisberger. When he's got a good quarterback, he puts good things on the field. So I think those concerns are a little overblown. Scheme fits, obviously, a little off. But I just think it was the right pick for Tennessee in the sense that we're kind of listless, no identity. Nobody really outside of Tennessee, which sounds a bit silly as I'm in England myself, really knows what the identity of the Tennessee Titans actually is. And now it's Marcus Mariota. It's Marcus Mariota doing Beats by Dr. Dre commercials and Night commercials and Titans handing out thousands and thousands of two-tone blue Lays at draft parties and things like that. Mariota on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I think it's just given everybody that has any vested interest in Tennessee a boost, regardless of what he puts on the field. We're actually relevant for 4, 5, 6 months of this offseason, which has been absolutely brilliant, to be honest.
It does give you a little bit of relevancy in the off season. That's true. You know, the quarterback always does that. That's the glamour position. What do you see out of him this season? Do you think he'll struggle? He obviously doesn't have a ton around him. Do you think he makes some flashy plays? What do you think?
I think he'll flash. I think a lot depends on the offensive line. I mean, as you're probably aware, we've invested a lot, a capital, be it draft or a salary cap, into that offensive line. And I think it's time now for Taylor Lewan, Chance Warmack, Andy Levitre to step up and really become a dominant unit. And if that happens, he's got time back there. I think his reading of the game, his progressions and his diagnosis and things like that will come along, because he's just a smart kid. From listening to him, anybody can see that. Everybody, all the character references you hear from people he's played with or being coached by, all suggest that it is very cerebral and is a thinker and a student of the game. So I think, as much as the scheme fits obviously a little off, and a lot of people have highlighted that, I think Wiz and Hunt will adapt. I think he'll only have to make maybe half field reads in his first season, kind of like what Cam Newton did. And I do think there'll be a lot of license to run. I just think, yeah, there's going to be struggles. It's a rookie quarterback, and there's going to be interceptions, and there's going to be sacks and things like that. But I think if we can come out of this coming season knowing, kind of in a Vikings with Teddy Bridgewater way, that sort of a franchise quarterback that potentially we could build around, I think we'll all have to be over the moon with that outcome.
Yes, and with Mariota, maybe that's the thing that separates him from the RG3 comparison that I just gave him is perhaps you know, the drive and intelligence on the field. I'm not saying RG3 isn't an intelligent guy, but you hear the stories about him being just concerned with other facets in his brand and not getting along with folks. And, you know, I don't even know how many of those stories are true. That's just the general perception, and that is maybe where Mariota differs. And one guy who is also along the same kind of path with the drive is the guy I would say is the second best quarterback in the division, and that is big game Blake Bortles. You know, he's a big, strong guy. Toughness is certainly something I would describe him, going back to our early conversation. And he's done everything that the staff has expected him to do. He worked on his mechanics, which is a problem. You know, he had a rough year last year, but it's not as rough as some national people like to say and just make it seem like he's Blaine Gabbert or something. He makes plays. You know, he's a playmaker. He's got that with him, and he just needs the consistency, and that just goes with a rookie quarterback. But supposedly he's making all the right strides, and that's what you want to hear out of camp, is everybody saying that Blake Bortles has made the right moves, and he's obviously worked on his game and blah, blah, blah. You know, it almost makes you realize whenever you're reading about your team, and this is just a good good trick to look at for anybody's team out there that you follow is a lot of the stuff that the writers aren't saying, or a lot of the stuff you aren't hearing. Because if there was a lot of talk about other positions this year and there wasn't really talk of Blake Bortles' work ethic or how he was working, that's when you begin to worry. And just with any position out there, if you're wondering, you know, why hasn't my writer talked about my safety that I was high on or something, it's probably because he hasn't done anything, or he might even be looking bad. So with Blake Bortles, I was not high on him going into the draft last year, but now he's my quarterback. I saw him play for a year. He certainly never gives up. I like him. I'm going to take him over Brian Hoyer. I'm now going to take him over Zach Mettenberger, even though I drafted him last year. And I'm not very high on Mariota. And obviously, we have to see how this plays out, because the quarterback position is pretty wide open besides Andrew Luck. And just wondering from you guys, what do you see? Does Blake Bortles scare you at all? Do you think he's going to be a top quarterback? Do you think he's a guy you get excited to play because you can chalk it down as a win? You know, you saw him play against your teams last year. Dan, what do you think about my guy Bortles?
Bortles, he came off as a rookie quarterback last year. The only games I really watched him play were against the Colts, so I don't have a big time thought on him. But you brought up an interesting point about him, that he needed to work on his mechanics, and I'd be curious to hear your take, especially after the Blaine Gabbert experiment, to see if you think that perhaps he was rushed into the starting lineup a little bit too quickly. Do you think he should have been afforded some more time to work on his mechanics rather than putting him into the line of fire as quickly as they did?
100% yes. Unfortunately, our starting quarterback was Chad Henne, and he's still the backup there. And funny enough, I love him as a backup. I think he's a great backup. But while Henne was running the offense, it was so bad. And even with Bortles last year, the rankings and everything that you look at for the Jags are not high at all. Bortles should have had more time, but it's the NFL, and sometimes you don't get more time. And their plan from day one was not to start him right away. And they always talked about that. We're sitting him for a year, blah, blah, blah. And then it was against the Colts where they were down, I think, 30-0 at halftime, and Gus Bradley looked around and he was like, well, forget that plan, Blake, you're going in. And Bortles did some things right off the bat in that game, and you could see his playmaking abilities. And the one thing that I'll say about him, especially because you know, we just went through the Blaine Gabbert experiment before this, and some people in Jaguars land like to say, you know, let's not compare these guys, you know, different situations, blah, blah, blah. But comparing is a lot more fun. And for me, what I see right away is Blake Bortles isn't afraid, whereas Blaine Gabbert would just duck it at anything. And Bortles will take the hits and he'll run away. And the courage and everything like that, that's something I want to see, is that my quarterback is at least ready. So we'll see if the accuracy and consistency comes with it. But at least he's not afraid of, I would say, the moment, but he hasn't really had a moment yet. But he certainly fits in to the NFL game.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you made some good points that from a mental aspect, he's something that, as a Colts fan, you know, you see that he has a lot of that. The physical aspect with the mechanics is where I think that I'm not as worried about facing him twice a year as I would some other quarterbacks around the NFL. Not necessarily the AFC South, but he definitely has a lot of room to grow, and I think he possesses the attitude and the desire to grow into a pretty good starting quarterback.
All right. Well, we took a lot of time talking about quarterbacks. Maybe that's on me. Maybe that's a good thing. But let's talk about the other positions in the AFC South, and let's go to running back. This is another kind of interesting position where you got a couple incumbents, and one wasn't on the Colts last year, but just, you know, veterans. And just on paper, you got to go with Arian Foster as the best running back in the division. But now we have Frank Gore in the division, getting up there in age. And it is just OTAs, but one guy again, you know, as I'm saying, if you didn't hear anything about him, you might be a little worried, but TJ Yeldon is getting a ton of praise and just looks great, supposedly, in OTAs. But let's look at it this way. Arian Foster is the best running back in the division, or your guy, who comes close? So, Neil, give your case for your running back, or just, you know, just mention that you like Arian Foster better.
I haven't really got a case. I just long for the day that Arian Foster goes away because he just destroys Tennessee every time he gets on the field. He's just obviously a class talent. And I think when I look at Yeldon, I do a lot of fantasy stuff, and I do a bit of writing for Fake Pigskin, little plug there. When I look at TJ Yeldon, Arian Foster's the guy it most reminds me of. I think that, like, short area burst where he makes himself small through holes, and I think a lot of his running style is quite graceful, like Foster too. So I think you guys have got something to be excited about there.
I really am too. Yeldon has looked great, and I think you're right about his running style. He looks smooth. I'm excited about him. I'll have to wait until, you know, preseason, the regular season, to really get a beat on him. And that's, you know, a lot of this is wait and see for us. But I do think, quite honestly, and this is just from what I'm hearing, I'm obviously not there in camp, sadly, but Yeldon could overtake Foster because of his injury problems, and that's another thing we have to take into account. But let's give the Colts a case as well, because they do have you know, I wouldn't put him up there in the all-time greats or anything, but, you know, Frank Gore's got a pretty good case. And now he's in Indy. So, Dan, what do you expect from Frank?
I'm looking forward to seeing Frank Gore run in Indy. He's been stuck in San Francisco with some pretty terrible coaching turmoil, so to say. But he'll get a chance in Indy to be the lead carrier. And, you know, going back to the quarterback position, he's not going to face seven, eight-man boxes like he has in San Francisco. He's going to see a lot of six-man boxes as the Colts spread some things out. And then when they buckle down and get into their power formation, he's the back I would pick to be in the Colts power formation. He just has that competitiveness that when he gets into that tight spot, he's gonna go forward instead of dancing in the hole. I think we saw some of that with Ahmad Bradshaw the last couple of years, where Colts get into these power formations and they get a running back, but as long as he hits the hole, has some wiggle, he'll get some decent yards. So another underrated aspect of Frank Gore is his ability to pick up some pass protection. And then the part I'll end with is, you know, he's been in the league for forever, and I think he'll be able to help progress Andrew Luck, help Andrew Luck read defenses, give Andrew Luck some tips on some keys for the defense that they're giving away the plays before the snap. So I think you're adding another smart player in the backfield for Indy, where they're going to get a lot of development for their young quarterback still.
Yeah, Frank Gore can end up being a really nice addition, especially when you had the man Trent Richardson back there last year. Obviously, other guys ended up taking his snaps, but better position than me. Yeah.
I think I took some of his stats.
Yeah, well, that's why you're hurting in the morning, and
exactly.
Everyone's got to hear about it. So, yeah, veterans there. And Indy kind of, I would say, going Oakland, but that's, you know, Oakland's a different animal and has not been good for years. But they signed a bunch of older veterans last year, and when you're the Colts, though, you have a lot more wiggle room to do that kind of thing because you have Andrew Luck, and I'm bringing that up because we'll segue into another veteran, and that's Andre Johnson, who's the, well, at least he has been the best player in Houston Texans history. I guess J.J. Watt at some point could overtake him, but
yeah.
Alas, Johnson is now a member of the Colts, and I know for certain the Titans don't have the best receivers in the division. The Colts now have T.Y., Johnson, and Moncrief, who I like, and they just drafted somebody else. So, Dan, are you taking the receiver title here?
I think so. I think it's pretty easy, especially knowing their quarterback will give the receivers a chance to show what they're good at. Andre Johnson, I've seen some things on some Twitter studies, as I'll call them, where people are showing me pictures of Andre Johnson being wide open and the quarterback just missing him by a mile. And I don't think he'll struggle with that with Andrew Luck. And don't underestimate his competitiveness. If he's getting the ball, I think he still has some gas in his tank. Then you got T.Y. Hilton, who's known to take the top off of defenses. He drew the Darrell Revis coverage in their last game of last season, so I think he's pretty well respected. He's been the focus of defenses as a second-year player, so I think he definitely has the talent to earn that respect. But then you'll have Moncrief and Dorsett. You know, who knows what their role is going to be? Who knows how far along they've developed in the year off? So the 3 and 4 aren't maybe the key pieces that you'd like it to be, but there's definitely some talent. There's definitely some growth opportunities for those guys.
And that's interesting you say that, because honestly, I like your 3 and 4. I liked Moncrief last year, possibly because I kept him in a keeper fantasy league. But also Dorsett was a guy I was really liking before the draft came up. I kept looking at him and I was like, hey, I like this guy. And of course he goes to the Colts. Tennessee got a very interesting wide receiver in the draft, but I'm looking at your depth chart, and you can talk about the guy you drafted, or just what guy out of this group do you like? I know there's some people who might be high on a couple of these guys, but not me. So who do you like at wide receiver, Neil?
I love Kendall Wright. I think Kendall Wright's the kind of guy, like, if I could compare, like Emmanuel Sanders, where if he was playing for Denver or Green Bay, he'd be an absolute superstar. But he's playing in Tennessee with, like, a previously anemic quarterback situation. I think Kendall Wright could be a real NFL playmaker. I think he's kind of he's developed a toughness as well, which he didn't have when he first come into the league. He'll make the tough catches over the middle as well, and he'll get in there where it hurts. But I sort of, when we chose Doriel Green Beckham in second round, I punched the air in delight, because it was just such a non-Tennessee move to sort of go out and get a guy like that with huge character issues, but really banking on his upside. And I think it's all there in front of him to, like, really go and be the number one receiver and really make that position his own and sort of take over this team offensively.
Green Beckham is definitely the guy out of that entire group, even though you say you like Wright and they've got Hunter and, you know, all that. But the one guy who would scare me is Green Beckham, and obviously he'll have to prove it in the league. But I thought it was very interesting that they picked him up. Jacksonville has just only young receivers, so I can't contend that they have the best, but I like these guys. Allen Robinson was the best out of all of them last year. He was consistent, and he's got the potential to be a number one. That's a problem we're seeing right here, is they might all be number twos, all these guys. But Robinson was the most consistent, and Blake started looking for him, and it was unfortunate because he got hurt, but he has come back. Marquise Lee had a super slow start, but he started to come on toward the end of last season. He's got a little injury he's dealing with right now, but he should be okay. And just a guy that I fell in love with was Allen Hurns. He drops a couple, so that's a problem, but he was an undrafted guy, and he caught two touchdowns in his first NFL game, over 100 yards, and he was just the deep threat. And, you know, I like where they're going with the wide receivers. I got to touch on the Texans real quick here, too, because we don't have our Texans rep. They stole my guy, Cecil Shorts III, from Mount Union. But Cecil was often injured, and he didn't have a great season last year, even when he was on the field. And looking at the Texans, honestly, Dan and I kind of touched on this the last time we did an AFC South preview, but they might be in some trouble because we don't really know about their quarterback, but their wide receivers, you got DeAndre Hopkins, who is good, and Keyshawn Martin, he's shown a little. So I think Hopkins is the one guy. Cecil, I don't know if he'll stay healthy. And, yeah, that situation could be interesting, especially if Arian Foster got hurt again. But let's move on to the tight ends. Yes, please. Please do. I didn't know if you had anything on the Texans. Yes.
I think DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver in this division. Might be controversial, but I think he is. I think he's really going to emerge this year as a true number one. And I think he's the kind of talent that could help their quarterback situation.
There's a play that sticks out in my mind that makes me disagree. He's definitely not the most competitive. The Colts played the Texans this year, and I don't remember who fumbled it, but there was a ball just laying on the turf, you know, 6 feet in front of DeAndre Hopkins. And he watches 3-4 other players dive on that football, and he just stands there staring at the football. And yeah, if you're going to be a top receiver in the NFL, you have to have the competitive nature to go get that ball. I mean, you complain, or he doesn't necessarily complain, but receivers complain about not getting a chance to get a football, and there's a football laying right in front of him, and he doesn't want to go get it.
Yeah. There you go, DeAndre. Dan is calling you out.
Yeah. Maybe you can hit me up on Twitter, and we can have a friendly conversation about it.
Yeah, maybe anything anyway, because I hate giving the text. I've already gave them Arian Foster love, and now Hopkins, and I feel like kind of dirty. So anything, any knock on him, I'm all for that.
Got it. Ooh, this. Hopefully, we have time for a really interesting question I want to ask you guys. That reminds me of it. So stay tuned, people. let's move on to the tight end position, and I am going to proudly stamp the Jacksonville Jaguars with having the best tight end in the division because we gave them a truckload of money, and that is Julius Thomas. And not only that, but I don't know if the next guy is the next best tight end, but as far as tight ends are concerned, and the Colts are pretty good with theirs, and even the Titans, but having Julius Thomas and Mercedes Lewis is just going to be a luxury. Julius Thomas, I've totally got, it's just not pretty. I've got a huge man crush on Julius Thomas. He's awesome. I liked him on the Broncos, and he's only going to get better. And he's been a great leader, it seems, so far. And I was not expecting that at all. I just wanted a big dude to catch touchdowns. But he looks like he's taking a leadership role, and we might have two tight end sets with Mercedes. I think we are certainly set at tight end and have the best. But you guys also can make cases as well, so let's hear from Dan.
Well, I think the AFC South has found their position of strength. I mean, you could even argue that Houston's developing some tight ends, but I think the Colts have the best duo myself. The problem is Dwayne Allen's health. When he's healthy, he's able to help protect Andrew Luck. I would say he's definitely the best blocking tight end in the AFC South. I know there's a couple other good ones out there, but he did a great job of helping down, hitting some guys, and then going out and catching passes. And then if Kobe Fleener can figure out how to consistently catch a football, he'll be pretty tough. I mean, he's a huge target over the middle of the field, but he'll turn his head upfield before he makes the catch. So dropping passes has killed him. So hopefully he's still developing and getting his eye on the ball so he can catch and turn upfield.
You certainly have a case there, and maybe some people will agree with you. Tennessee, I want to say the good news and bad news, and I noticed this just a ton last year, was your best receiver, and that's why I was a little down in your receivers, was Delanie Walker. And Delanie Walker was basically a nobody or an average NFL player, and then he comes to Tennessee, and he kind of has quietly, I don't know if anyone knows about this, but he had a really nice season as far as what I saw. So tell us about him, Neil.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find a bigger Delanie Walker fan than me. When we signed him as a free agent, he came with the tag of stone hands, nothing more than a blocker, and I actually thought we'd overpaid. But since he's put on that two-tone blue jersey, he's absolutely jacked as well. He's just a massive guy nowadays, and he's added speed as well. He kind of can get away from DBs and linebackers, makes tough catches. He's just an example. He's a leader, a tone setter, and he never lets you down. I don't know if you guys saw the concussion he had against Baltimore. I think it was week 8, week 9 last season. To come back and really finish season after that just is really a mark of who he is and what he is to this team. I think he's just a massive, I think he's going to be a massive boom for Mariota as well. I think it would not surprise me if he were Tennessee's leading receiver again, which you don't want that to happen. But I think his game's developing, and I think he's going to have another really good year, really under the radar sort of year.
He is totally under the radar, and I had to do some writing as well for another website to plug myself, and I had to do a lot of AFC South games. And Dan, I just wondered, did you even notice Delanie Walker at all?
I did not notice him during the season. The off season, I read, and it sounded like he had a great season, but when I was watching the games, no, I didn't notice.
Well, maybe that's a problem then, you know, when they played the Colts, maybe he didn't step up, but still, I was pretty impressed with him. At the same time, I think it's bad when Delanie Walker is basically your best receiver, and that's part of just one of the reasons that Tennessee struggled. All right, so let's talk about the offensive line, and we're going to go a little faster here, guys. We're coming up on it on time, and I want to get to records and all like that. So quickly, let's just hear about the offensive lines. Neil, you were saying that the Titans put a lot of effort into theirs, and what do you see?
I think it's rather expensively assembled. I think there's some talented players there. I just think they need to be a unit. We were absolutely racked with injuries last year, to the point where Will Svitek, started left tackle for the last 4 or 5 games, which obviously didn't help Mettenberger or even Charlie Whitehurst. I just think those guys need to get on the same page now, because we spent high draft picks, top 10 draft picks, and we spent a hell of a lot of cap money on that offensive line. I think it's high time they become a unit and started dominating games.
They seem like they have a chance. As far as I could tell, is right tackle might be an issue, right?
Yeah, we drafted Jeremiah Patasi. I think the hope is that he will win that battle. But also, they've brought in Byron Bell and Fernando Velasco, a solid NFL starters, not setting the world alight. But I think, obviously, it's there for Patasi to go and win that job.
All right, and Dan, tell us about the Colts O-line.
The Colts O-line's good, not great. They brought in a new right guard from Philadelphia, the pipeline of all Colts talent from a Gregson standpoint. But the positions of issue are going to be the center position. We're having a fourth-round guy and an undrafted free agent battle out for that, and it doesn't sound like either one of them's doing anything to take the job, while our best offensive center, in my mind, went off to Arizona last year in A.Q. Shipley. And the right tackle, we have our Jack Muirt, who started at left guard last year, and it looks like he's going to be doing some work at right tackle this year, which I kind of thought was going to be the case when they drafted him, that he would be a flexible guy on the offensive line, but I didn't think injuries would force him into the spot this early in his career.
Yeah. That's always a setback, and I know that for sure with Luke Jokel going down in his first year. Quickly, the Jags, these guys all have a lot to prove. Basically, it's supposed to be improved, but for me, I'm in wait-and-see mode. They got some new blood on the offensive line. But first of all, Brandon Linder is a guard that they drafted last year, and he is great, and he's better than everybody expected and kind of recognized around the league. Other than that, got Jokel at left tackle, still have stuff to prove. Parnell, they signed from the Cowboys to play right tackle. We'll see. Beatles from the Broncos last year. He is supposedly looking better, but they drafted AJ Khan in the same position. And then at the center, we have a guy named Luke Bawenko, which is fun to say. But we also signed Wisniewski from the Raiders, and Wisniewski seems to have a leg up there. Basically, they gave up a ton of sacks last year, and I'm in wait-and-see mode on them, although some people are high on the moves that they have made. The Texans, they still have their rookie guard, and according to this depth chart, not starting from last year, Suofilo. And they... and to be completely honest with you, I wish we had a Texans rep, because O-line is certainly something that is hard to account for when you're not a fan of the team.
Didn't they lose the long-term center?
They
lost him in free agency, a long-time starter. Just, his name escapes me, but obviously that's a hard position to replace when you've got two new quarterbacks on the center as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think... it was, I don't remember why he left, but is it Chris Myers?
Yeah, that's it, Chris Myers, yeah.
Maybe, it says here he was released. But there's also reports of 4 days ago they're exploring bringing him back. So maybe the Texans.
Yeah, a guy that knows the system obviously can help QB.
Definitely, and they're going to. So the center QB exchange could be something to watch for the Texans. I did such a wonderful job wasting time on two quarterbacks that aren't even in the division, let's talk about our defenses as a whole, considering our time constraints here. And, the Texans, let's talk about them first. They have J.J. Watt, who's an all-timer, who I said he might overtake Andre Johnson as the best player in Houston Texans history, and that is saying something. But we all know how great he is. They now have Will Fork in the middle as well. They're going to have Clowney coming back, who they're bringing along slowly. Their secondary, they have Jonathan Joseph. And basically, when you have J.J. Watt, you've got a defense. So they might have to look at that side of the ball for this season. Do we see anything else that we like or dislike with the Texans, or does anybody just want to give praises to J.J. Watt?
I just think they're going to be a dominant unit again. As far as obviously you want offense to keep them off the field, which is obviously the big question. Didn't they draft a middle linebacker as well? From TCU, Paul Dawson, that's Bengals. I'm sure they drafted a middle linebacker, because obviously it's going to be important.
McKinney.
Bernardrick McKinney, because obviously they've had major problems with Cushing's injuries.
Yes, indeed.
So that'll be important.
They also drafted Kevin Johnson at corner, who a lot of people did like. And basically they just... In the draft, they said, we're going to bolster our strong unit, and we'll worry about quarterback later. Or maybe they'll see somebody that they like. Dan, anything on the Texans' defense there?
Their inside linebackers, I think, did a good job as a unit last year, getting some pressure on the quarterback, which was probably more scheme-driven than talent driven, but it was. I saw that they had the second most pressures from the inside linebacker position on the quarterback.
Right, and that's interesting. And they're adding another inside linebacker, so they apparently have some depth there, and or a good scheme going.
So I guess J.J. Watt probably took a lot of attention to the outer,
yeah,
outer edges, so it was a little easier to get a push up the middle.
True. I think I can create a good scheme if I just had J.J. Watt. let me talk about the Jags defense here real quick. This was the best unit on the team last year. Sendarek Marks was the best player, and he will be returning from an ACL injury, unfortunately. Of course, Dante Fowler Jr. got hurt. That was our number three pick in the draft. That was unfortunate. We do rush the passer well, and a lot of people, I don't know if that surprises anybody, but they did have one of the top sack numbers in the league last year, but Gus still wanted to work on actually pressuring the quarterback besides the sack numbers. We signed Jared Audrick, so our D-line is very, very strong, in my opinion. Our linebackers, we basically have one guy that can play each spot, and then after that, zero depth. And the secondary looks like it's rising. There was a battle between your guy, Dan, Sergio Brown, and a rookie we drafted, James Sample. But James Sample got injured, of course, and he won't be back until training camp. And we have four corners, I think four, that can play in this league, and that's important, especially when going up against Andrew Luck. You got Devon House from the Green Bay Packers, Demetrius McCray, who came on last year, Aaron Colvin, who might be a stud, and Dwayne Gratz, who's pretty good, a little bit underachieving from his draft spot. But with Gus Bradley, he can make a defense out of a bunch of nobodies, and now they have a few more somebodies. And I'm pretty excited about the Jaguars' defense. I'm hoping they can be the best unit, defensive unit in the division. They might have some competition with the Texans. But let's hear about Tennessee's defense. I know they signed a pass rusher and re-signed another one, but what are they looking at the defensive side of the ball, Neil?
I think, obviously, Dick LeBeau is a massive cause for excitement. I think,
yes.
But the one thing that does worry me is scheme is obviously complicated, and we have got a lot of young players on that side of the ball, a lot of sort of reasonably highly drafted young players too. I think we overpaid to keep Derek Morgan, but I think it was the right move. I think he's a reasonably decent NFL starter. I think Arakpo was a calculated gamble, because if he can get healthy, he's an 8 to 10 sack a season guy, and he's proven that every time he has been healthy for 16 games. I think LeBeau can actually get the best out of those two guys. Middle linebacker, I'm really worried about. I mean, Avery Williamson was excellent last year for a fifth-round draft pick, but I do worry about his coverage skills, and I think he will be asked to do that a lot, especially when we're playing three-man fronts. And I think Zach Brown returning from injury is going to be kind of a boost there, because I think his speed and that will help in coverage. And I think we missed that last year. We sort of had two down thumpers in the middle of the D last year, and we couldn't really cover anybody over the middle. So I do worry about that spot, because I just love us to put a stud middle linebacker in there with Williamson, but obviously drafting at number two overall in a weak linebacker draft, it weren't going to happen this year. But obviously the strength is really the front three with Jarrell Casey, and they've added depth to that in draft with Angelo Blackson and things like that. I do worry about corner depth, because I think McCourty and Parrish Cox are good starters, but when you're looking at Bleedy Ray Wilson and Cody Sensabaugh, your three and four, I think you're really struggling. And I think as far as safeties, again, I think Denoris Searcy were an excellent pickup from Buffalo, really under the radar signing. And Michael Griffin's, again, another solid starter, but beyond them, not really a great deal. I think of the secondary, the one that could emerge is probably Mark Eston Huff. He's a bit of a tweener, were a third round pick last year, can play a safety and corner. I'm expecting him to emerge in both positions. I really like his talent, but I think we can put a decent 11, 12, 13 players on the field, but I do really worry about the depth.
Right, and that's an issue you got when you don't have a quarterback. you got to go find the quarterback and you got to help him out. And then you just start thinning out at a ton of other positions. Dan, you are playing on a different level than our teams. You have to go against teams in the playoffs. That's how it goes. And again, I'll bring up your run defense, as I think it's an issue and still will be. But tell me about other aspects of your defense. Obviously, you got Vontae Davis at corner. Let's hear about the Colts on D.
The defensive line over the last couple of years has really struggled to keep the offensive line players off of their middle linebackers. Middle linebackers are definitely not a position of strength, I wouldn't call it, but I don't think it's an area of weakness necessarily in the run game. They definitely can't cover tight ends. We touched on the last podcast where Julius Thomas torched them for 3 touchdowns last year. Just the lack of inside linebackers the Colts have for coverage purposes. But they went out and they signed a couple defensive linemen to help shore that up. And they're hoping that the other linemen will continue to develop. It was interesting that they didn't go after a nose tackle in free agency, especially with Vince Wilfork dangling out there. I thought for sure they would make a play on him, but they didn't do it. So they must trust the development of their younger guys for this season. They brought in a guy from the St. Louis Rams who they're comparing to Corey Redding. He's a younger, athletic Corey Redding is what I've heard thrown around about him. He can bring a little more pass rush than Corey Redding had. Brought in Trent Cole to help shore it up. I'm surprised that there's not more in the media about Robert Mathis. He's been pretty slow to recover from his Achilles injury. So I thought that would be getting more coverage this time of the year, but there's not a whole lot out there. So that pass rush is going to be a big concern early on for the Colts, but hopefully by the time they face New England, when Tom Brady's back at the helm, Mathis will be back ready to go for that. And then the cornerbacks are probably their strengths from the defensive side of the ball with Davis, Toler, and they brought back Darius Butler, who's been a nice slot corner for him. And then safety is the position of concern for me. The last couple of mock drafts, I think I've drafted 4 safeties and then signed another 30 undrafted free agent safeties. But the memo hasn't made it to Ryan Grigson yet, that I'm panicking over that for the long term.
Right.
They brought in a couple of, 1-year deals that they did last year and then having a couple 1-year deals for this year. But I don't know that they're addressing that for the long term like I'd like.
True. I just still see a lot of the same issues that'll come up, but again, you're going to beat a lot of teams 45-21. So at times it won't be an issue, but come playoff time, it may be. Good.
When it matters is where it'll be the issue.
Weaknesses get exposed in the playoffs and we shall see, because a lot of people are picking Indy for the Super Bowl early on, and I don't think I'll be one of them because of that reason. And again, quickly, sorry we didn't get to a lot of our defense in depth to all our AFC South fans out there, but I just want to quickly, before we go, get our record predictions, which are way too early for all the teams here. And for each of us, let's give a record prediction for the Texans, too. You can just throw out any random thing if you want, but I think I got a prediction for them. So, Dan, give us your Colts record and a guess on the Texans.
For the Colts, I think they're going to go ahead and continue winning games that they should, and losing some games that they should, and then losing some games that they shouldn't. So I'm gonna go ahead and say some injuries will hold them back, and they'll be an 11-5 team. And then I think the Texans are just gonna struggle to score. So unless they get up early in the game and can turn around and give the ball to Arian Foster, they're gonna struggle. And knowing that they're gonna face some good defenses outside of the division this year, I'm gonna say they'll be a 6-10 football team.
There you have it. From Dan, for the Jacksonville Jaguars, they have to have a better record. They just do. There's no magic number for Bradley to stay, but my goodness, if they have a 3 or 4 win season, it would just be awful. It's weird looking at this as an upgrade, but what I expect is somewhere around 6-10, and I really am hoping for higher. I think they can push for 8-8, but they have a tough stretch of the season with road games and not being home for a while, and they're still young. So I'm going low because that's how I am right now, but they're going to be good soon, and they might even still get second place in the division, I think, because I think the Texans, I kind of agree with you, are also going to be around 6-10. They might even be worse because I'm down on them. I love J.J. Watt, but J.J. Watt was on a 2-14 team once before. So I think the Jags have a chance to be second in the division this year. If not this year, very soon. Neil, how about for the Titans?
I'm looking at the schedule now. And if you take out Indy and New England, I think every game is winnable. So with that in mind, I'm going to go 4-12.
Oh, Neil, bringing it. I love it. That's I see what I'm looking for with the Jags is being competitive as they were last year more often than the year before, which is sad to say, but it's true of last year. So I'm hoping this year for that. Looks like Neil's looking for about the same. I had another question I wanted to get, but this is going to become like the Jimmy Kimmel, Matt Damon thing. He's just never coming on the show, and it's not that important. We're running pretty long. And, Neil, thank you for making your debut on Next Fan Up and talking about those dang Titans who I don't like. Thanks for your time, sir.
No problem, guys. Enjoyed it.
And Dan, Coltsland, enjoy another one of your seasons with a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Thanks. Hopefully we can hang another banner this year, but hopefully it's a couple more victories that we get to celebrate.
There you go. The Jags, we're going to hang our good enough banner this year. That's going to be our banner down in Duval County. So for the guys here, and for the Texans rep we don't have, please hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, or Gmail. Give us a Houston Texans fan. This has been Next Fan Up. And as Pod Vader likes to say, there you have it.